Hey guys, Mark from the GAK.co.uk Guitar Shop podcast here. Just dropped in at the beginning of the podcast to remind you all that if you want the inside scoop on any news or any deals that we've got going on at the shop, do follow us on Twitter at GAK_co_UK. You can also follow the podcast guys individually. You can follow me at Mark_random. You can follow Matt at Matt_Nightsy. You can follow Jay at JAYBN1. And you can follow Joe at Joseph_900. Hello and welcome to the GAK.co.uk Guitar Shop podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, who is with me this evening.
Hello!
My name's Matt, and I'm the manager here in the guitar store.
That was super enthusiastic.
I was trying to do a GA. He's always enthusiastic.
Yeah.
That's hello, just a lie.
Hello.
That's Jay.
Hello.
Who else is here?
I'm here. Hello, I'm Joe, and I'm here for bass-related issues.
Good. Of which we have some this evening.
Wonderful.
How is everyone?
Good. Yes, good.
Now, we have to say that we're not quite sure where it's coming from. Somewhere outside, people are playing steel drums.
Yeah, there's a steel drum band outside the shop.
So if you hear some sort of calypso rhythms going on outside, that is what it is. It's not one of us busting out a little tune.
We should have left it and seen if anyone was like started to go mental, because they were like, I can't stop hearing
calypso. That's where Jay was this week.
It does sound really good out there. It's making me really want to lilt.
That's where that's where Jay's been practicing.
Yeah, it's a good sounding instrument. I don't know whether it's for a
run it through a delay pedal and we'll talk.
We'll talk. Yeah. Oh, how would you do that? You'd have to like mic it up with some contact mics or something.
Six mics through six delay pedals into six Akai head rushes into six amps.
What? Each of the head rushes into six amps?
Yeah.
Wow.
How many amps is
that? I've got an Akai head rush.
Have you? Do you use it?
No. I just found it in a box the other day. I was like, oh, yeah.
At some dude's house when you broke in.
Yeah, just found it in a box. Found it in a box at Matt Knight's house and I put it in a bag. So what's been going on? What's been happening this week?
Half term.
So always
busy.
Busy for you.
Busy for me.
Always crazy in the shop.
And yeah, we've been doing crazy deals.
Yeah, I think, I'm not sure if any of the podcast group got on it, but we...
Well, one guy from the group did email about one of them, and they sold too quickly, which was the Charvel
Skatecasters,
which we did mention I think a few weeks ago, and now
yeah, that's
dropped the
thing.
Price even more, and
crazy price, and they flew out the door.
I mean, what was it, 800 quid guitar for
700 quid guitar, 739 quid I think we were doing for £149.
That
unbelievable. That's why you got to keep your eyes permanently on the GAK Facebook page like I do for the deals.
It's your job to keep your eyes firmly on there.
No, and it's like super interesting and fun and that, so people should do it.
Alright.
No. Plus, crazy deals. £600 off a guitar.
Yeah, we are at the Facebook page for crazy deals. We're going to keep the crazy deals coming.
And the Facebook group for crazy banter. Not crazy banter. Talk about guitars and that.
Yeah.
Mm. So
And try and leak crazy deals to the podcast.
Yeah,
group.
We'll try and always try and get them in first. Again, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds group is the official Facebook group of this podcast. Now there's been some new kit and stuff this week.
Yeah,
what have you been playing?
Well, we were just playing around with the Flashback triple delay.
We were
managed to get one, but someone on the Facebook group got one way before us. And
do we ever mention that we do these videos for Guitarist magazine?
I don't know.
I don't think we ever have.
So
what is the show called?
The gear show.
Yeah,
Guitarist magazine's monthly hour-long guitar show. We contribute to it.
I don't. I just stand behind the camera. You two feature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I sort of talk. I introduce Matt, and then he talks about guitars for 5 minutes, and then plays them for 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
But we had some good stuff. My favourite custom shop telly that we've ever had, the Super Heavy Relic 64 telly.
It really is Super Heavy Relic.
Yeah, it's really good. The Relicing's excellent. I know Super Heavy Relics tend to get a little bit of flack from, you know, people who like to keep guitars on stands in the front room.
I just don't understand it. Whenever we put up a relic on on Facebook and say like, oh, this is the guitar of the day, it's this or whatever, it gets so much grief. I just think they look beautiful.
People either want to play guitars or look at them, and the people who want to look at them don't like heavy relics.
I think it's funny, isn't it? I heard that, you know, the one that we always use here is, you know, someone walks in, it's like, oh yeah, I've got these, and he's wearing like a designer pair of ripped jeans, and it's exactly the same thing. It's like, well, you'll pay a lot of money for something that's a designer ripped pair rather than just a pair. And, you know, it isn't for everyone. But it has become... I must admit, I love relics, but I am going more to NOS at the moment.
Really? I'm starting to err towards, on as far as relics are concerned, I think Gibson do a better job of it than Fender. Just because Gibson go for like transit wear, whereas Fender tend to go for playing wear, and it's almost like, well, playing wear is independent to the player. And you know, it's not going to be the same for everyone. And so when Fender go for the, you know, the buckle rash, and they go for like the plectrum rash on the top horn,
I think
and
it's
stuff.
Just, you know, it's, I think some of the heavy relics can be a bit overdone. Like you'd be like, I don't think I've ever seen a guitar like that played in. But it was like a thing they never intended to do.
No.
They never intended to do it as a permanent fixture.
It was just they were so popular.
Well, I think they did it for NAMM in... Yeah, mid-90s?
No, that sounds about right. Custom Shop, yeah. Sounds. I think Custom Shop was 95 was when it started. Is that right?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe I thought it was a bit before that, actually.
Okay.
But, I mean, either way, yeah, they did it for a limited NAMM thing, and I think people just went crazy and they snapped them up, and they're like, oh, maybe there's some money in this. I mean, who would have ever thought to build a guitar that cost, you know, £2,000 and then make it look
beaten up?
Yeah.
It works, though. For me, I mean, I just can't play the NOS stuff. It's too bright, it's too shiny. If I've got the same guitar, I've got the option, I'm going for the Relic.
I mean, that's why I have quite a few people who put in custom orders for NOS bodies, relict necks.
Yep. I think that's proving more popular these days, isn't it? It seems to be like a super popular combo.
Or, you know, Closet Classics, which is always a good happy medium.
Yeah, I like,
which is just
like
a kind of
classic.
No real kind of dinks or chips, but, you know, cracked lacquer and whatnot.
Nice. Bit of wear.
Yeah, but I must admit, the Gibson ones, they do look class.
Yeah, they do.
No real topic this evening, gents, but I have an issue that I want to bring to the table.
Are you sure this is an appropriate place to talk about that?
I'm going
to
air my dirty laundry out on the podcast.
Okay.
Put it in front of your mic-based speaker cabin.
Oh, and you say it first. I'll say it after.
Am thinking about getting back into single pedals.
Hooray.
Because
welcome to the club.
So at the moment,
don't congratulate him on this. This is a stupid idea.
Oh, basically,
it says you. You love the pedals.
Yeah, I'm well into pedals, but, you know, Mark Packham doesn't need anything else. He plays punk rock.
That's not true. At home, I very rarely play any punk stuff.
Because playing punk at home is boring.
It is boring.
Yeah. You've got to play with other people.
What do you play at home? Do you just play Beatles covers?
No, just like a bit of soul and, you know, like R&B.
What do you think of going to ambient music? You don't need any friends. You just a looper and some delay.
Well, so
which
this,
you've got. On the ME80.
I know. So the setup at the moment, and again, I've posted pictures of this to the Facebook group. Les Paul Junior, ME80, Hughes & Kettner Tubemeister 5, which I got a couple of weeks ago, which I'm loving. It's really got me back into playing guitar at home. The ME80 has got a lot of stuff on it that I don't use. And I think I'm sort of coming around to the idea of maybe switching back to some more focused single pedals. Now, the effects that I use are slapback delay. I use that a lot. Don't need anything too long. Spring reverb and compressor in the front end.
What?
I know.
After all the flack I get.
I know.
Right, okay.
And I'd like some sort of nice amp drive-y type sounds. So...
all of which are effects that you have on the ME80.
I know.
They're
I
actually
know.
Very good.
I
as
know.
Well. Example,
I know.
Like the Boss do very good examples of all
okay,
of those sounds.
Okay, so some of the stuff on the ME80 I really like, and I will replace that with Boss pedals. Mm-hmm. The compressor, for example, I'm pretty sure I'm going to get a CS3, unless you gentlemen recommend anything else.
What size pedal board are we going for? Are we going for the Diego?
No. We're not going Diego. No,
Diego
we're going
Tormund.
Pedal Train. We're going
PT Grande.
Pedal Train Junior.
PT Grande, the
Pedal Train
one.
Junior will fit you sort of 7 to 8 pedals, and I think that's a
seven to eight. You ain't squeezing them in properly.
I mean, I...
Actually have to use it in a live gigging environment. That's why. I see your pedal board. With your pedal boards, you pedal so ridiculously close that there's no way you could use them in a live situation.
No, I've just got tiny feet. Have you not? No, I've filed my feet down. I wear these incredibly small shoes.
So you can squeeze them in. Yeah. Your pedal board sort of looks like a kind of aerial shot of a sort of metropolis. Just looks like everything's crammed in with tiny little gaps between. They're the streets and your sort of skyscraper pedals crammed in.
What was it in Judge Dredd? Mega City 1.
Yeah, that's what your pedal... That's what you should call your pedal board.
Oh, yeah, I'm in. Yes.
Mega City 1.
And then the little one, Mega City 2.
Mega City 2, yeah, definitely. Or Micro City 1. Slightly not as mega.
Do you think I could build a pedal board big enough that also had a small scale electrics track that ran around it as well?
That'd be amazing.
That's a really good idea.
Actually, yeah. There's a question, and I've forgotten who it's from. There was a question from the Facebook group that I didn't print out for it. We're going to do some questions in a minute, but you've just reminded me of one. I'm going to write a note reminding me to talk about that. So, CS3 compressor, right? Yeah. Well, that's what we're...
Staple, standard, very good.
Yeah. I really like the one on the ME80. Nice and, you know, it's basic. Yeah. That's exactly what I want.
Have you thought about, like, the MXR Dynacomp or anything like that, or the Supercomp? I mean, they're a little hotter.
Yeah, I like the Supercomp. I think the only thing I've got nailed down 100% at the moment is that I want to get a CS3.
Okay, cool.
Definitely.
Well, I think they're good.
That's... I love that compression sound on the ME80.
Do you have a CS3?
What?
Do you have a CS3?
No, I use a Pigtronics at the moment, and another one. And I really like the Pigtronics, but it's not a compressor I'd leave on all the time.
No.
CS3, I think you can dial it back.
Stat,
but
it?
I mean, I really like the Wampler one.
I found Pigtronics too hot in the long run.
Yeah.
If I wasn't playing anything,
is the mix control between dry and wet. I think that's really handy because it gives you this kind of... It allows you to have all the compression without the kind of squash.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree, and it's really nice.
For the CS3.
CS3 is just great, isn't it? It's just a brilliant sort of standard compressor. Yeah. It's not too much of anything.
I did used to have one. I've had quite a few pedals in my time, and I think I had one of those at one point.
So far we've got guitar, TU3, CS3.
Okay.
Next.
What's next? You need your drive next.
I need a drive.
Well, you want something sort of front-endy. Tube Screamer? Tube Screamer? Moore Green Mile?
Yeah. I think I want that kind of thing.
The Green Mile is wicked.
I mean, the other thing...
A great cheap alternative.
Soul food. Good drive. Electron. Can be a little bit harsh, though. Like, not harsh, but it can be... Yeah, it's quite hard hitting, and the Tube Monsters are quite like a solid, clean
driver.
Sound.
What I was going to say is that the Tube Screamer, not the Tube Screamer, the Tube Meister is quite a bright sounding amp, so I need something, I think, to fill out the mids.
And the bottom end a bit more. What about Fat Drive? Pigtronics Fat Drive.
Yeah.
Nice mix between drive and
Mojo.
Jay's not here, we don't have to talk about
it. We don't have to say Mojo because Jay is not around. I'm gonna go with the Fat Drive, I think.
Really?
Because I
like how they sound, and they'll go to a fuzz. Because I was thinking, do I need a drive and a fuzz? But the Fat Drive, if you crank it up, you get almost kind of fuzzy tones out of it.
Yeah. What about something like, what about those new Vox pedals with the valve in them?
Do you know what, actually?
They do a flat four.
The flat four is actually a really, really good sounding pedal.
Yeah.
Super underrated. But probably too big for me because I'm trying to keep the
big
footprint.
Box. Also, something like 6 AA's or something like that?
But it's just run off a 9 volt.
I know you would, but why isn't it a 9 volt?
Right, let's assume Fat Drive. Okay. We're going with that. Okay, I do occasionally use Trem. TR2, Boss TR2, is that nailed on?
Hold on, but if you want reverb as well, how much do you want to spend?
Well, the budget is not a concern at
the
moment.
Where are we putting the M5?
MXR Univibe.
No.
Has a tremolo on it.
No, I think no.
And you get vibrato.
I don't want that. I do like that sound, but I don't necessarily want that.
What other good tremolos are there?
I would say
there aren't that many on the market.
Full tone.
We
do the full tone one's really nice. So you want like a big amp trem.
Mm-hmm.
But what about? Oh, I had it in my mind a second ago, and I've.
I mean.
Oh, I'll tell you what is really good. If at the top end, Wampler Latitude. That is crazy.
Bear in mind, the tremolo is the effect that I'm definitely going to use the least on this board.
What about Strymon Flint? That's the one I'm thinking of, because then that covers your reverb.
I think the Boss one, if you're going to do that, or the Cool Cat. There is a little down trend, isn't there? Yeah.
I'm going to go with the TR2 for now because I know what that sounds like. I'm not necessarily going to buy one. I'm just kind of putting a board together, yeah, and I thought we're kind of workshopping it. You know, we'll get there.
Okay. Next.
Delay, slapback delay.
Okay, now before we move on to delay, are you sure you don't want to get one of the little Moore mod boxes?
No, I don't use modulation at all.
But what if you want to? You've got everything on there and a tiny footprint. You can definitely fit one on your Pelotron Junior.
I never, ever, ever use modulation.
Just put it on the underneath and turn it on all the time, and then you never
just have
use
it on.
It's just on.
Just always have a slow phaser. It improves everything.
I will reiterate, I never, ever use modulation. Delay. It's something I definitely use. Slapback. Best tapey slapback sound. What are we saying?
Well, Dan Electro one.
Oh, the reel to reel?
Yeah.
Too big.
Deco.
Wait. The deco is a whole other thing. Let's talk about that at the end.
We might as well just go for a good versatile delay. Do you know what? I'm obviously at the moment on my medium-sized board. So I've got the TC Electronic Alter Ego V2 and an old DD3.
Yeah.
Love the TC. Great. Tone prints. Great. Fell in love with the tone printer on the computer. But DD3, still better.
Is it good for a slapback, though?
No. Not as good for a slapback.
It's not going to be.
But the TC, I would say, if you want an old tapey snapback, then the TC Electronic Alter Ego
the new Boss Analog delay?
Well, I've been listening to some comparisons. DM2 definitely sounds very good. I think, to be honest, I'm torn between the Carbon Copy.
That's what I was about to say. Why didn't I think of that? Carbon Copy.
MXR Carbon Copy and the DM2. I think, for me, are the best two sounding.
Well, I mean, I went to my good customers, our good friend, Steve, who is also on the group, and we were putting together a pedal board for him. I don't know, Carbon Copies, we sold so many, as we were saying before, when they first came out, and then I've sort of, so much else has gone, we'll make something like that, but actually they're still the best sounding one.
I love the sound of the Carbon Copy. I still think it's the best analog.
I need to buy one.
Delay.
I used to have one. Why did I sell it?
Don't Moore do a really good copy?
Because you just said that, I'm going with Carbon Copy. If it's good enough for Matt Knight's ungiggable board, Mega City 1, it's going
Mega City
in the drive. And finally, Reverb.
Reverb.
Reverb pedals.
Moore Shimverb.
I won't need that. I just want a spring reverb. That's all I want.
Just a spring. Oh, I was going to say, yeah, because if we were going for PT Grande, then we could have got Carl Martin headroom, you know, the actual spring tank in a floor pedal.
That's what you want.
Just a spring. Holy Grail.
Holy Grail.
Electro-Harmonics Holy Grail.
We haven't had a representation of the old harmonics, which is crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I like the old box ones. The new ones are exactly the same. I just like the chunky old school ones. But the spring sound on that, just good.
Yeah, they were. Do you know what? They were the go-to reverb for probably years.
I think for a long time they were. You know, alongside Boss, they were two of the only pedal companies. That and MXR, I suppose. Boss, yeah. MXR, Electro-Harmonics.
MXR don't make a reverb, do they?
No.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was RV5 or Holy Grail, and that was it.
Such a massive catalogue. Yeah. And they don't do a reverb. That's weird.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure, for years, people would come and go, I need a reverb pedal, and you'd be like, well, I've got RV5, which does a bit more stuff, but perhaps not quite as organic sounding, you know, it's versatile, but doesn't have the sort of roominess. Or you've got the Holy Grail.
I think the thing is, you've got Holy Grail that sounds like a spring tank, and you've got the RV5 that does some really good digital reverbs. I went to a guy who works in Pro Audio, Dan, he's got one of the old 80s Boss rack reverbs. I think it's the RS8000 or something. This like 4U rack unit thing, and it is so amazing. Even now, that like you hear a room sound, you hit one key, and you can hear like the reverb in like a back corner somewhere, and you can hear it like hitting the floor in front of you. It literally sounds like it's actually creating a room in front of you. It's really bizarre.
Classic old rack unit, doing the business.
But that the RVs are great, but if you just want spring, the Holy Grail.
And finally, I guess I kind of want to get a looper, something super simple.
Oh, well. RC1.
Yeah, I mean, RC1, but I've plugged in the last couple of days, I've plugged in Ditto X2 for people.
I like it because it's got the half speed.
It's got the half speed,
really
reverse or
easily
stop.
Accessible.
I definitely won't want that. I just
get DL4.
No, that's too much for me. Line 6 DL4 is way too much.
I think RC1.
RC1. RC1.
Then you've got a little dial that spins around. And
you've got the Jam Man as well. The new dinky little Jam
Man. I'm not
a
huge fan of the interface. I really like them as in terms of the features, but I think...
I think if you're going to get it, yeah.
I think, is it the Solo that you can sync several Jam Men up together?
That's right, yeah. That's little, right. Yeah, there's a little mini jack cable that links them all together and you can have different loops going. It's quite cool. Different pedals running the same length loop sort of thing.
Yeah.
So there we go. So basically what we've decided is I'm going to replace my ME80 with loads of Boss pedals.
And a pedal change. Yeah, we haven't been as creative as we should have been, really, have we?
Oh, no. Just Packham just doesn't want to... No.
I can't get away from the trusty Boss. I mean, they're really good. You know, we've
come to Mega City One.
Makes sense to me. That would literally be like me. It looks like Tokyo from above, and it would be like me going to Tokyo.
Be like Blade Runner.
I don't understand anything here.
It's like Blade Runner when you turn the thing. It's just so many like little lights and
Definitely. Well, there we go. I mean, that's exactly what I wanted out of this session before we got into pedals, really, is I wanted you guys to help me build a board. If you've got any suggestions for what I should
it's
be plugging
board.
In...
Maybe I'll buy those.
I may be... So, once this podcast goes up, I'm going to open this up to the group. I want the board... I want the group to effectively build me a board.
I want the group to buy me and...
I want them to...
I've actually got a spare Pedal Train Junior.
Have you? Well, yeah. Who has a spare Pedal Train Junior? I have a spare Pedal Train 2.
I've lost the
bag for it. I left it.
Well, I just got a Pedal Train 2 off a guy who works here, and the power supply for it. So,
I won't be buying either of those from you because I'll be buying them from gak.co.uk, an excellent website who I hear have great, best customer service and the best prices in Europe. So that is where I'll be buying.
I was thinking, if you've got a spare one, you could buy all the pedals.
Someone is really hunting for a promotion.
Yep.
You could buy all the pedals, and I could put them on my board and then use it.
Okay, that sounds weird. I'm not going to do that. So I'm basically buying pedals for you.
Yeah,
I'm not going to do that.
Feed the addiction.
When this podcast goes up, I'll put a little message up on the group and you guys can vote, I guess, on what I should be putting on the board.
How delightful.
It's going to be good. So, also on the group, as always, we've been taking questions, and that is what the rest of this podcast is going to comprise of.
Welcome to Question Time.
Just before that, I forgot that 9-string is just right above you. We've got two of the weirdest guitars behind you.
I know. We're sitting
The 9-string Ibanez and
the Jackson
Roswell.
The Jackson Roswell, which deserve to be spoken about. In fact, boys, turn around.
Jeff's taking a picture right now.
I'm taking a picture. This is like that picture's going up on the group now. So people can see what the Roswell looks like.
Actually, yeah, I'm in.
What, the Jackson Roswell?
I'm in.
The Roswell is really great. For anyone who hasn't seen it, Joss did a fantastic demo for us on a spaceship of this guitar. So check it out.
Do check it out, Jackson Roswell.
But you can actually, if you, I've got the Jackson. I've got a Jackson.
You've got a Jackson.
Yeah, I've got a Jackson. I've got a Jackson folder with all the options and having the Meteor inlays or the I think they call
the crop circle inlays.
Crop circle inlays. Yeah.
But absolutely bonkers guitar. Bonkers.
But on the thing of Jackson, I just saw that fluorescent yellow one we've got for £169.
Yeah, we got.
Man, you can buy some crazy guitars for sub £200 these days.
Bonkers. Yeah, unbelievable. Should we dive into some questions?
Yes.
Why not?
So first up,
Alan.
Before we get into that, I was going to say these come from the Facebook group, which we have mentioned: facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds group. Stop doing that.
Very well.
Good. But this one comes from Alan. This one is for you. For you.
You can't. You've got to specify.
Well, as you were just talking,
right?
That sort of does it. Okay. This comes from Alan, and it's for Joseph Branton. He says, "Are the Fender Deluxe Active Jazz and Precision Basses really as good as the reviews make out? A decent budget instrument, or do they have really good tone?"
A decent budget. So I assume we're talking about the Mexican ones, not the American Deluxe.
Yes. I would assume his question basically is saying, should you buy a Deluxe Mexican bass or an American Standard?
You should definitely buy an American Standard in answer to that. In answer to the question, or do they have really good tone, I would love to answer it, but I think I'm still yet to hear an active bass that I think has really good tone. And that comes from a very personal opinion. Of course, there are loads of people that think active bases sound great. I just don't happen to be one of them. So, no, I think the purpose of a Fender bass is to, you know, it's a big chunk, especially in the jazz bass's case, it's a massive chunk of wood on the body. And I think it's daft to have active pickups in there because you're just not taking advantage of any of that.
I'm going to give a slight counter argument to that in that I think the Deluxe Active P bass is actually a really good bass, mainly because it's got a P bass and a jazz bass pickup in there. And they're both, or at least one of them's a custom shop pickup. It's a vintage Noiseless.
Noiseless on the jazz bass pickup is, yeah.
And I mean, the active circuit is okay, but I mean, a P bass is just like, it's a P bass. You've got, it's just a almost like a tidal wave of tone that you then dial out on your amp or your preamp or whatever you need to do.
Do I remember correctly that on the Deluxe Active it's a jazz bass neck on the P bass as well? It's certainly a more tapered neck.
Yeah, they are a slimmer profile. I don't know whether they actually class it as a
just
jazz
on the Mexican, not on the American, but yeah, on the Mexican, yeah. I think it's definitely more tapered than a standard.
So, I mean, I really do like, I mean, I like that there's the option there, but I mean, I think firstly, I mean, a P bass is just like I say, it's just loads of tone that you can then do with what you want on your amp or your preamp or straight in if you're going straight into to a, you know, a sound card or a mixer or whatever. And the active stuff seems almost kind of unnecessary. But I mean, the answer as whether they're a decent budget instrument, I mean, I would say spend the extra, get something American, maybe American
well, I mean,
special.
How much are they? About £700?
Yeah.
So around that price point, if you were looking at jazz basses, you've got the Mexican 60s reissue, which I think is one of the best basses you can get for sub £1,000. And you've got the 70s reissue, which has the 70s pickup placement for the bridge jazz pickup. Both of which look gorgeous. I mean, the 70s comes with, like, you know, bound neck block inlays. A two-tone sunburst with a black scratch. It looks great. And on the P bass front, you've got the 50s P bass, which you can get in Fiesta Red. Comes with a gold anodized scratch plate.
Isn't there a Classic Player bass series now as well?
The only Classic Player bass
is the Rascal.
They've messed around with it before. Like, they released a, for a very reasonable sort of £850-ish, they released a Nitro 60s jazz bass, and also released a Nitro 50s P bass in black with a gold anodized plate. So, but neither of those are current models.
Okay.
They were just there. But yeah, you've got the 50, you've got the 70s P bass as well, which I'm not such a big fan of because it's a maple neck with black block inlays, which I don't think is what defines a 70s P bass at all.
Yeah, they're a bit of a weird spec. I mean, you could you could get that on the jazz basses, but I don't think
the P basses. Not on the P basses. If you were going to do like a 70s P bass, I would have thought like rosewood neck, black on black.
Yeah, I mean, black on black with maple or, oh, I mean, the classic one that people know about really, like 70s P bass, is the Dee Dee Ramone bass, which is the white one with a, you know, white maple neck. Same with, you know, Sid Vicious played the same thing. That's like the kind of iconic punk bass, really.
Yeah, exactly. I would have thought they'd have gone for something a bit more iconic with that, because I think they did nail it with the 50s ones, the 50s P's, and also the 60s and 70s jazz basses. But, I mean, there you go. There are four instruments that I think that are the same money that every single one of those is
slightly
offering
better
you.
Choice.
Yeah, is offering, I mean, you better build quality.
The build quality on the Deluxe is kind of the same as the standard, really. That's not really what, like, you're paying the extra.
No. Extra money you're paying for that pickup, for that Noiseless pickup on the bridge and
the circuit.
Exactly. I just think you get a load of extra features on the on the other models, and really those Mexicans now, sort of the decade reissues that they do, are just so good. They couldn't be any better for the money.
The Classic series, I believe it's referred to.
Right.
That's the official name. Where are we at with Aerodyne? Because I know there's been some FSR stuff recently, and those,
right,
if you're looking for something that's a bit more than just a standard P bass, Aerodyne, I guess, has always been an option, but there are a few options on that front now.
That's right, yeah. I mean, the one that we always have, Aerodyne, I guess, are one of the last things that we're still getting over from Japan at the moment. And the Aerodyne that we can always get is the black Aerodyne bass with a matching headstock, and it's bound. It's a jazz bass body, but it comes with a precision and a jazz bass pickup. It's passive, and it looks really smart. It's a really smart. I can't think of another word.
And they're sleek.
Yeah, let's go for that.
They still do the white. Have we still got any of the white with black binding?
These are the FSR ones. Yeah. So white with black binding and a scratch plate, which I think makes them look a lot better.
Yeah, they do.
Matching headstock. The necks are great because they're a really sort of fast, like satin neck on them. Yeah. Brilliant instruments. I think we had a couple of other colours. We have a
metallic
one?
Blue and metallic red.
Yeah, that's right. So all great. Very, very modern.
What sort of money are they? Can you remember?
Well, the black ones were around £750.
Yeah.
I assume the FSRs are hitting around the same.
Yeah, so they're going to be a similar kind of price to the Deluxe.
That's right. So another option, if you're after something very modern looking.
I think they're a much better base. That would be another option to go for.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't mention the artist stuff because most of the artist models actually feature in around that price point for Fender as well.
What's his name? Foo Fighters fella.
Nate Mendel, probably the best P bass on the...
That's underground. Yeah, definitely. That's kind of my favourite that isn't an American standard.
Yeah, so, and really tasteful. The Nate Mendel P bass comes in what's the red? What's the finish?
Metallic red
candy apple. So
candy apple red.
I can remember what it is. It's candy apple red with a black scratch plate, and it's lightly relicked, but kind of in the past when we've seen cheaper relic jobs, I mean, as you know, as we spoke about, like custom shop relicking, I guess as much as is love hate, it's really expensive to get it right, and I think they've done a really good job on this on a Mexican P bass.
Normally the cheaper relics, they really look like a template, don't they? Whereas this, I think the ones that we've seen have all been quite similar in the way they've been relic, but they just don't give off that cheap relic vibe. They seem much more like the kind of more expensive ones.
Yeah, I mean, it's very light, the relicking. It's almost as if the finish has just been sort of sandpapered a little bit. But really, you know, gorgeous. That's a quintessential 70s P bass right there. You've got that. You've got the Mark Hoppus. You've got the Mike Dern. There are loads of options in that. I mean, if you want something really modern, you've got the Duff McKagan.
Painted neck. That's super 80s, that bass.
Exactly. You've got the Roger Waters as well, which is a wicked...
That's actually seems more like a classic, like 70s style bass.
But it's a 50s neck.
Yeah, it is 50s neck, but you know, black on black with the maple. That's such a cool bass.
Yeah, it's a really cool bass. There's tons of things around that price point. I think that's maybe why the Mexican deluxes are never really spoken about, certainly not by me, and why I haven't given them that much of a glowing response is just there's so much other stuff at that price point that offers you loads more.
Definitely. So Alan, I hope that answers your question. Loads to look Sir out for Alan. That money. Sir Alan, indeed.
Is it The Apprentice?
It is. Alan Sugar listens to this podcast. He's actually the main investor. I don't know if you know. We collectively won The Apprentice. And he's given us a load of money to do this podcast. And so far, I mean, we give it away for free. So it's financially, it's working out great. Next up, Gavin says, I'll talk about working out financially great. Gavin says, if some rich unknown uncle passed away, say, and left you with a bit of cash for your guitar hobby, but the rules were you could spend the full amount, say £20,000 on a single guitar, maybe a custom or vintage, two, a vintage amp, he suggests like an old Plexi or a Tweed, or three, all the cash on pedals and accessories. What would you do? You've got £20,000 to spend. One guitar, one amp, or a pedal collection.
You specified dollars.
Well, let's say £20,000.
So £10,000.
Okay. What are we saying?
£10,000. Let's call it
£10,000. Oh, let's say it's £10,000. So $20,000, £10,000. Matt Knight.
Would it be a waste if I spent it all on pedals?
I mean, imagine the collection.
Imagine that. £10,000 worth of pedals, Matt Knight.
Yeah, but
I think we need to weigh up. What are you going to get? So say you were going to go for a guitar that was £10,000. Realistically,
I can answer this off the bat.
Well, you'd get a bass.
Well, actually, we saw what I'd get the other day.
Oh yeah, we did. That's right. Yeah, we were just looking at some vintage guitars. And
we saw is it a 54?
Yeah, very, very early P bass.
I'm really into the original flat pickup P basses. And we saw like an original 54 in incredible condition
like $8,000 or something. Yeah.
So, I mean, if that's close enough to my £10,000 mark, I'd go for that and give £2,000 to charity.
Matt Knight.
Do you know what? Part of me is thinking, you know what? An old amp would be good, but the problem is with an old amp is old amps break.
Yeah.
So you've got to find one in really good condition, and it's like, nah, But I've got, there's lots of good new amps.
It's not... Yeah, I mean, it's not like a... It's not,
I don't think amps work the same as guitars.
No, no, I think amps, out of both of these, out of all these options, amps for me are completely off the table because I don't want an old amp because it will break and I don't need to spend £10,000.
I'd rather plug into a lot of different amps than have one amp and yeah. I have one really nice yeah. guitar.
Well, in that case, so for you, because I'll talk about basses in a minute, but for you, what could you get for 10 grand these days that would be worth buying if you were looking at vintage stuff?
If you're looking at, what, vintage guitars...
Because it's not going to get you, like, a 50 Strat.
No, but do you know what I'd buy? I'd buy a more limited, you know, new model. And that's okay. why I was going to say, I would buy a Gibson Citation.
Okay.
Which are the hollow bodies. It's the, I think it's the Citation. It's the hollow bodies. They only make about 5 a year. And they are about $20,000.
Okay.
They're
what's
all,
the spec?
They're, like, diamond inlaid... like Diamante, like inlays, yeah. like all that kind of crazy. They're just like an amazing hollow body. I'll see if I while you're talking, I'll find a photo. So rare that when I spoke to Gibson about it, Eric Clapton rung up and went, "Oh, I'm playing the Royal Albert Hall and I really want to have one of these." And they went, "Oh, we can't get you one." He was like, "But I'm Eric Clapton.
Can't get you one."
I was like, "We can't get you one. Like we don't have one. We can't ship you one in time. Like we'd have to find one in the States." And I think buying something that is fairly rare or going for something that... I mean, the thing is, if, as I, you know, loads of people always ask, oh, well, if I buy this, what's, you know, what's going to go up in value? And it's like, well, if I knew what was going to go up in value, I would have already bought it. Because I know it's going to go up in value. And I think it's impossible to say. But, you know, we get these nice limited edition custom shop Fenders and, you know, limited edition Gibsons and stuff like that. But for me... just buy anything that comes out from Gibson that's aged and signed.
Yeah, any of the Tom Murphy.
I mean, basically, if I'd had the money when I started here and bought the aged and signed Billy Gibbons, I would have quintupled my money in about 5 years.
Quintupled.
Yeah.
That means five times.
Five times. Nice. They were £9,999, I think, aged and signed Billy Gibbons. They needed 50, and they're going for about £50,000 now.
Menthol.
Or, you know, when they did the Jimmy Page number 2, which had 27 switching options, aged and signed.
Jimmy Page's number 2.
When they were new, the aged and signed were £27,000.
What do they go for
good
now?
Grief.
Like, I don't think one's come up second hand yet, so everyone's waiting.
Oh, this is the thing, isn't it? For this particular
it's
question,
it's worth what anyone's willing to pay for it.
Well, but also, the vintage guitar market is kind of priced out of even that range now. You know, 10 grand is going to get you what, like a late or mid to late '60s Fender, I guess.
Yeah, and I mean, it's how not even going to be in that good a condition.
That's mental. That I didn't realise it was so much more for guitars than bass.
Oh, totally. And this, you know, it comes to, if I'm talking about it, I mean, I would definitely buy a bass. I mean, I would buy probably like a mid-50s P bass, I guess, similar to what you've chosen. But I mean, I would choose the actual, you know, the modern P bass shape, the contoured body rather than the sort of slab body. Because they'll just be a wicked instrument, and you'll get one in decent condition for 10 grand.
Yeah, 57, you'd still be all right.
Yeah, yeah. Totally, totally.
So just going back to the Citation, might just get it because, well, you know, if we're talking pounds, maybe, depends on the conversion rate, $21,499.
Wow.
So, yeah, in 1969, this company decided to celebrate its artistry by the only way it knew how, making the most elegant, finely crafted archtop guitar conceivable. Dubbed Citation is only created in extremely limited numbers, and it's an instant collector's item.
So for those people who don't know what it is, oh, it's a jazz archtop, isn't it?
It's a single neck pickup jazz archtop, and I mean, you know, I would Google it and have a look, but even you can just see from that photo there, it's pretty.
Well, you can't Packham. See if
no,
you're
you
listening.
Can't see, but if you go to the Gibson website, you can see. And I mean,
yeah. When you get to that sort of price point, it's pointless looking at spec, isn't it? Because that's not what you're paying for. I mean, you're paying for the fact half of it's made out of diamond.
I mean, the fact is, they don't really tell you what the spec is.
Don't need to.
If you're going to spend that abalone much money cloud on a guitar, you probably don't need
it. It's got abalone cloud motifs.
Yeah, like you say, if you're going to spend...
Oh, it's 24 karat plating for old hardware.
Right, there we go. So basically,
it's nothing short of breathtaking.
If you're spending $22,000 on a guitar, you're not going to worry about the type of pickup that's in there, are you?
I don't know, but maybe I'll play like... If you were that rich, Imagine you just buy it and just buy one and run it through a Big Muff and a Marshall stack.
Does it gent?
Does it gent, yeah, tune it down.
I bet
stick an extra few strings on it.
I bet it doesn't. So there we go. Again, we'd like to hear your responses, really. If you had £10,000 to spend, tell
what
us,
would you do?
What would you do? Put it on the Facebook group. facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds group. Next up, this one comes from Jeffrey. And it says, podcast question, lightest giggable combo,
Jeffrey.
Pub venue size. Not cheating alternatives like miking or DIing. Guitar combo or bass combo option, go. So the lightest amp you get away with
can
doing
I,
a gig.
Can I throw in a curveball, first of all? Not something we usually have in store, but I will get one in if you really want the lightest thing possible. DV Mark Jazz 50.
Okay.
They bought this for when we did the Andy James night. I picked it up and I thought it was empty. I picked up the cardboard box and I thought they'd given me a cardboard box.
How is that possible?
It's so light, it is ridiculous. And it's also super loud, solid state, 50 watt jazz combo with digital reverb. Sounds incredible. It's got a DI out. But the speaker, I mean, the thing is, it's got to a point where the speaker weighs less than the cab. So the wood weighs more than the speaker.
Okay.
But they're using really lightweight wood. So it's just, it's so light. It's almost too light. It's almost like it'd blow away if you were in an outdoor venue.
That's mental.
I can't really think of any other options. I mean, now you've said that, I mean, everything else is going to be heavier than that.
But they are expensive. That's, you know, they're like £400-£500.
Okay.
And they're obviously a little bit more limited. So for me, TubeMeister 18.
Yeah. Hughes and Kettner TubeMeister.
Because they are light. They are really portable and they are loud.
Yeah.
And you can plug them into a PA if you're in a PA.
And as I've already discussed, the 5 that I've got is incredible. It's just such a good sounding app. I can't believe how much guitar I'm playing, just because I'm really enjoying how it sounds.
Pub size venue. What about the old, I'm sitting next to it at the moment, the Cube Streak EX? That would pub it up, because you've got the little speaker stand mic on pole on there.
Yeah, definitely. So Cube Streak EX. What sort of money are they?
$399. They're all battery powered, so you know it's going to work for outdoor venues and stuff. And you can run them in stereo if you want, and you can plug guitars, basses, keyboards.
They don't have to be battery powered, though, do they?
They run as well. But they're 50 watts, they're really powerful. So, I mean, that would cover, you know, if you were like a small duo going out or something like that.
Oh, definitely. If we're not talking about like a full band thing, then I think the Cube stuff has it sewn up.
No.
I mean, I've definitely seen people in pubs using the Cube stuff.
In fact, I went to my local pub on Sunday and there was a guy using a Cube Street and a microphone.
Okay.
And this pub is like pretty big.
Yeah.
No PA, just those. Back of the pub and acoustic and microphone. It's great.
How about on the bass side of things, Joe?
I think on the... It's the band again.
They've started
it
again.
In my head, I was like, what?
I can hear the drums.
The steel drums. For me, I'll give you a cheap option and an expensive option.
Because
the same thing, I think, portability and being lightweight often come with a price tag. So I'll go with the expensive one first, which would be the Mark bass again, I guess. The Mark Bass CMD121P.
Okay. Do you think they've built everything around just, look, I don't care what you make.
Just light.
Just make it
ridiculously light.
I mean, that was, to be honest, when they started, and, you know, knowing the kind of origins of the Mark Bass stuff, that was kind of
that
the manifesto,
they
really.
They were the neodymium company.
Yeah. Yeah, and now everyone's kind of doing it. But yeah, that CMD121 is the go-to combo.
Exactly. I mean, it's a single 12... inch speaker, which is shockingly has a shockingly good low end response in comparison to a lot of other companies that make 12 inch combos, and it's really small. They do a P and I can't remember the other letter that they put after, but anyway, the P designates that the controls are top mounted, which means that the entire box is basically a cube around a 12 inch speaker, which is ridiculous that you can have a bass amp that small that can still pump out sort of 400 watts, which is great, and actually really good for double bass, really versatile as well.
Yeah.
But again, it's a tiny little cube and it's going to cost you know, nearly £900, which you could buy an Ashdown 810 and an ABM 900,
which
for,
is not portable.
No. What about on the cheap side?
On the cheap side, I think TEC kind of have it sewn up at the moment with the BG 250. Which, yeah, they do in a variety of options for around the £300 mark. Actually, for about £250, you can get their 2-8 combo, which
I'm not sure that's loud enough to do a pub gig, because I was trying one of those because I wanted something small to go and gig with, and no, I think the 2x8, it just doesn't convey enough weight, not enough bass.
I haven't really tried the 2.8, so.
So the bigger one.
But certainly the 15 does. I didn't think much of the 2.10 either, actually, but I don't like 10s. But the 15 was great, and with the new model, you know, they're £310, I think. And
it's crazy, it's so cheap.
And you're getting two tone prints on the top there as well, so, you know, tons of choice off there. And they've got this intelligent dynamic volume control, so 1 to 5 are. On your volume are geared around home use.
Okay.
So they're quiet but still responsive with your gain up to 5, and then past 5 you do get a jump. You get like a big whoop up in volume.
What, a little
but
what?
Then a little whoop. But then sort
sorry,
of
a little what?
A whoop. And then the
sorry,
6 to
a whoop.
And then the 6 to 10 you have you know, kind of a more
sorry,
giggle.
Yeah.
It was a whoop. And 6 to 10 you have this more giggable kind of volume where it's you're getting the full sort of 250 watts.
And what would you say? No, I don't know what I was going to say there. So yeah, TC or Mark bass, I guess, on the bass.
Yeah,
on
the
things,
bass front.
It just does the business.
TC Mark.
Wait. We've just created a new company. DVTC Mark Bass.
It's my new Halloween costume.
Oh, God, I need to think of a Halloween costume.
I'm going to go as... I might go as Joe Branton. Sort of stick on a really bad Freddie Mercury tash and a... You know, your baseball cap is like when Charlie Brown plays baseball and he wears that cap that's like a bit too big.
Yeah, it's a good cap. I've got another one that says geek. I'll wear that for you tomorrow. I promise.
I don't know what you are. Scott says, so here's the question. I asked a few podcasts back about building a single giggable rig for both electric and acoustic. In the market for pedals 1, 2 and 3, he drew a diagram that came with this, by the way.
But we'll you have to imagine that diagram.
Yeah, but we'll have to spread out the purchases. Pre-planning required. Here's the option. So let me, for people who aren't on the Facebook group, why are you not on there? You should be. But if you're not on there, he essentially is running an electric and an acoustic through three pedals that are then being going through an AB split to change whether they're going through an electric or an acoustic amp. Mm-hmm. So he wants to pedals that essentially will do
both
electric and acoustic.
So he's going to go into this, into three pedals, into an AB, which is then going to split into an electric or an acoustic amp.
Yes, exactly. So, first up, a compressor. He says, I like the idea of a little compression on my acoustic signal as my control of dynamics is not great while also singing. I was thinking Boss CS3 or Soul Preacher. I mean, we talked about this earlier, really, didn't we?
I think, though, especially if you're going for a compressor through an acoustic amp,
Super Comp?
No,
definitely not. They're way too hot. We've got to MXR out the question. I think the CS3 might
be really think
one.
Though. I really think the OnePlug, purely because you can.
You need transparency.
Yeah, and I think that comes from having the mix control between the compression signal and the dry signal. I think you really need to get yourself a 50-50 split on that.
I think
a really squashed acoustic just sounds horrible.
Can we still get Aphex pedals?
No.
Okay.
Were Aphex the one that did the Aphex Air? The Airfex?
Yeah, didn't they also do that?
No, that was Alesis.
That
the
was
Air
it.
Effects.
Oh,
no,
God.
Aphex did the exciters.
Yeah, they did the bass exciter, which was like the go-to preamp.
They used to do a really good optical compressor, which was good for electric and...
But didn't they discontinue that and do a generic one that did all three?
That was called the compressor.
Yeah.
The compressor did the punch, I think.
Punch.
So what we're saying,
actually, they were really good. Maybe I'll try and track one of them down.
Yeah. So the Wampler.
I would say the Wampler because I think.
What is the Wampler compressor?
The Ego compressor.
Oh, right.
I'm confused. No. Yes.
I need to buy some Wampler stuff. I don't own any.
Wampler. Talking about building this pedal board, again, I mentioned it last week, but I listened to the Wampler podcast, and it just makes... I just want to buy their pedals.
Do they call it the Wampcast?
They do not call it the Wampcast. I believe it's called Chasing Tone. And it just makes me want to buy their stuff, because they seem like they're just, like, super geeky about pedals, and in the same way that we are. Are you getting attacked by a fly, Joe?
No, he just came for a little chat. He just landed on his
shoulder. What the hell?
It's winter. He's trying to hide.
And loving that baseball cap. Right, the second pedal in the train, an overdrive, electric only. Soul Food or East River Drive sound good in demos, but are there other low price options?
So this is going to come after the AB and go straight into the electric amp.
No, he's going to put it in the chain, but I assume he's just not going to have it on when he's playing the acoustic.
See, it would make more sense to have it after the AB box.
Yeah, that's true. Would it though? Because it'll be up, then it'll be post delay. Because he's going to have a delay next in the chain.
Yes.
Which will be for the acoustic and the electric.
Yeah, it makes no difference if it's going to be there, if he's not going to turn it on when the acoustic's
on. I don't know, you know, when you're someone who runs two pedal boards into three separate
amps, you've got to think about these things. So, that could be your catchphrase. You've got to think about these things.
Mad Night.
Mega City 1.
He often...
Maybe we should draw up a little poster. Me standing in front of a big, like, futuristic looking city that's made out of pedals.
If someone, I don't know if we've got any Photoshop wizards on the Facebook group, but if you want to knock up Matt standing in front of a metropolis of pedals, then
I want Matt in a superhero outfit made of pedals.
Yeah.
Pedal man.
So what we're saying for the overdrive then, he's saying Soul Food and East River Drive. I mean, it kind of depends what sound you're after, doesn't
it? You know, love the Soul Food. I think the East River Drive's got a little bit more to it in terms of a standard overdrive.
It's underrated, the East River. Because I think it's kind of been eclipsed by the Soul Food.
The Soul Food is good for a good clean boost. Because what I found is that actually having less drive on it, I think the more drive you add, the more treble you kind of need to add. And the more treble you add, the harder the sound.
Yeah.
And especially, like you say, if you were going into something like a Tube Meister, it's a bit too bright.
Speaking of more, and speaking of budget, I think the more Green Mile would be.
Yeah,
Green Mile's a good pedal.
It is a good pedal, and actually, it would be a very, very good overdrive.
Okay, so pedal three in the chain is a delay. Now, something that's going to be good for electric and acoustic. What do you think?
I think it's not a DD3, like he suggested.
Oh, I don't know. I mean,
see, that would be my go-to.
Really?
It's just kind of safe, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't think you want analog.
Yeah, I think
it would sound too muddy on acoustic.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I think you want something clean.
I always think of analog as being more organic, but I guess on an acoustic, it's probably not desirable.
I think the thing is, if you're running like a really nice, rich-sounding Taylor, to then run it through a carbon copy would just be a bit of an insult to the Taylor. The carbon copy's bad, but
it's kind of muddy-sounding, purposefully muddy-sounding. I think you want something clean and neat.
And Digitech Time Bender.
No, I mean, firstly, you can't get those anymore. And also, secondly, definitely way too much. I mean, I think the DD3 or DD6 are your perfect options, really. Sorry, DD7 are your perfect options.
Yeah. I mean, actually, I saw some good videos of people using the Pigtronics Echolution if you really wanted to go.
I mean, that's...
super fancy.
That's above and beyond, really, isn't it?
Super fancy!
I mean, that's... a lot of delay pedal, but it's a lot of money.
Yeah, but, you know.
I just think DD3. I mean, that's what the option that has kind of been pointed out here.
Well, I mean, I do love my DD3.
It will just work. That's the thing. You know when you stamp on that, you're going to get a great delay out of it without any messing around.
I think realistically, you know, if I was going to have one pedal, if I had to take one delay pedal with me forever, probably a DD3.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, just because you know it's going to work for every situation, it will do the business.
Yeah.
So there we go, Scott. Scott actually did give us a bit more info, talking about the type of guitars and stuff that he's using, but I kind of think it doesn't matter too much, really. I just think if you want a setup that is versatile in that you're going to be using it with different types of guitar, you kind of want stuff that is just going to work, and you don't need anything too fancy, nothing with too many features. Mm-hmm. And you know, the DD3, I guess, speaks to that, and so do the other ones that we kind of pointed
Keeping
out there.
Keeping it really. Simple kind of does really help.
I just think Boss is a really good way to go for if you're looking for that sort of setup, something that's just, you know, straight down the line, always going to work, always going to sound great, and will suit both types of guitar very well.
100%.
Now, I can't remember who it's from, but someone posted up on the group about lighting your pedal board. Matt Knight, have you got any experience with this? How do you do it?
Yes, I have, actually, and I have done it before. And it was another guy on the Facebook group, Mike, who showed me how to do it. And he was using LEDs that you buy for the underside of your car.
Okay.
When he was driving around the road.
Has anyone ever really found that to be a problem?
No, but I can't remember how he wired it. So there's a you obviously got the just two wires off the end, and then wired it into a chocolate block, and then wired it into a male barrel plug cut off the end of, you know, like a daisy chain, or, you know, like buying one of the spare adapter leads that you'd use for a Voodoo Lads power supply, and then plugging into the out on something like a TU3, which provides the 9 volts to power the lights.
Clever.
And yeah, it works, and you don't really get any noise problems, and it looks class.
Yeah, definitely.
I kind of meant, like, has anyone ever found that to be a problem? Like, lighting a pedal board at a show?
Well, I mean, I guess if you just want it to look nice.
I mean, the thing is nowadays, companies like to put super... They like to say, we've put super bright LEDs in this, and some pedals are too bright.
They're just like, whoa!
I mean, you step on it and be like, well, I can't see the rest of my pedal board, because it's just...
It's like you've opened one of the Ghostbusters traps.
Me and my mate were talking about building a light overdrive, which was an overdrive that had the guts of one of those super high powered LED torches in it as the light, but it had a knob on it that just turned the light intensity up and down.
Okay, nice. I'm in. Where can I buy one of these?
That's so good.
So when you step on it, it just basically turns on the torch as well as the overdrive.
Yeah.
But obviously, blindingly so.
I mean, where can I buy one of these?
I'll
make one. A establishment such as gak.co.uk perhaps sell these in the future?
Maybe we'll speak to Reese at Bigfoot.
See if he can make a.
Can you make a flash? Can you make a light drive?
A flash drive.
A light.
The hyperlight drive.
The hyperlight drive. Imagine that, and you can just oh.
Next time this year, we'll be millionaires.
Podcast group have the biggest selling pedal of all time, the hyperlight drive.
It's just a fairly bog-standard overdrive, but you could turn the light up and
it's
down.
It's DS1 with a torch in it.
Brilliant. Okay, one last question from Sam, who says, I'm in an indie rock band, and I'm currently running a Warwick Thunbolt on Line 6 Relay G30, Korg Tuner, Electroharmonix Bass Big Muff Pi, Moore Shimverb, Ditto Looper, Ampeg SVT5 Pro into a Marshall 4x12. I mean, that's a lot of gear. I want to downsize to something like an Aguila Tone Hammer. Aguila Tone Hammer 500.
Aguila!
I want to downsize to something like a Christine Aguilera Tone Hammer 500 to put on a larger pedal board so that I can... all I would have to bring to cabs provided gigs would be my bass and my pedal board. I would just throw it down one lead into the cab and I'm ready to play. Bearing in mind that my amp has both compression and octave, I would need to buy pedals for both of these functions. What would you suggest I bought for my amp, cab and new pedals if I sold my current amp and cab? Thinking about sale value of my gear. Also, would having the head on my pedal board cause any problems? So he wants to basically buy a small bass head that he puts on the pedal board that he can plug existing pedals in, and buy a compressor and an octaver so that the only lead that he has to come off the pedal board is the head to cab lead.
Yeah, absolutely.
Does that make sense?
It does make sense, yes, I understand perfectly.
So what head is small enough that will fit on a large pedal board?
We're going to talk about alternatives to the Aguila Tone Hammer.
Well, I just wonder what was available.
Well, anything by Mark Bass. I think the Tone Hammer 500 is very dinky, though, probably slightly smaller than the Mark Bass Little Mark.
What about there's a smaller Mark Bass, isn't
there? The Big Bang, yeah, and I think the Big Bang's probably about the same.
Yeah.
I think that's a good bet. I mean, there are other smaller things, but the things that are a bit smaller tend to be like 200 watt jobbies, like Gehling and Kruger do their MB200 and TC Electronics do their BH250. But again, I kind of think, the minimum I'd want to take to a gig is 500 watts. I mean, I think the Tone Hammer's great. I think especially if you're changing off of Ampeg, I don't think Mark Bass are really an alternative. I
know different sound, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just, you know, the head you can't drive. So I think the Aguila's probably kind of got that sewn up on the small amp front at the moment. Although, actually, that said, I'm a big fan of the Gehling and Kruger. They do an MB500 with valves in it.
Oh yeah, that's a nice sounding amp.
Which is nice.
Really small as well.
Really small. Really thin, but actually deceptively long.
Okay. Sound like you said that before, Joe.
Yes, I am. But yeah, they're great.
So MB500 deceptively long and thin. Carry on.
Deceptively long and thin. Yeah, they're really good though. And plus, you're getting 12 AX7s in the Valve preamp, which I actually don't know a lot about a Guido. I'm not really into small amps, so I didn't bother learning anything about them. We've only started doing them recently, and I just didn't bother reading up on them.
Well, do you know what? I mean, in terms of tone, I've certainly it's one that I've plugged in. I really like the sound, and like you say...
I don't know if there are valves in there. I assume there's nothing in the preamp.
Oh, I can't remember off the top of my head.
I assume it's the same as Mark Bass, yeah, kind of going full transistor.
Would it fit under a pedal train pedal board?
No, definitely not.
It would need to be on top.
I tell you what, the Galen and Kruger would, as I stated before, it's quite thin.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm thinking, right? So you Velcro it underneath the pedal train, and then the control knobs come through the little...
On the back.
Back panel. On a PT2.
Oh yeah, because they're perfectly placed.
And then so you can just, and then you just plug your lead into the front, and then other lead comes out the bottom of the pedal.
That's quite a nice idea. I mean, I tell you, the only problem I can see with this is, well, the two problems is I know this is in the aid of speed, but you know, having your amp head behind you is a tried and tested method that doesn't take a worth of time to set up at a show, and I would dislike having a big thick. Kind of
brilliant.
Carry on.
A speaker on cable or speaker cable running from my pedal board. You know, I could potentially trip over that.
But, I mean, what would you rather do? Go for something just a bit more long and thin, or would you just tape it down?
I've walked into this. but yeah. Anyway, so if you're gonna do that, then yeah, fine. But just be aware. I mean, I wouldn't want that sort of big cable coming off of the pedal board to go into the back of stage. With regards to pedals, if we only have to think of a compressor and an octaver, and we're gonna have all the money to throw at it from the sale of the SVT5.
Yep.
Then I think that's really easy to do. I think you could go CS3 and Micropog. Yeah, quite happily there.
Pitchfork.
We were
discussing
Well, I'm really into the idea of a pitchfork because I have to take two basses to gigs because I have some songs in E standard and some songs in D standard, and the pitchfork gives me the option to switch between those without changing bass. And actually, I just joined Joss's tech metal band where he plays in C. Some sort of C standard tuning.
Some sort of C tuning.
And of course, I can only play four strings, so that's quite a long way to drop your bass. I was going to string up one of my basses with the low four from a five set, but if I had a pitchfork, I wouldn't need to do that. So yeah, the pitchfork I think is a great option for an octaver, but you know, the Micropog is such a reliable, tried and tested. Option
method,
definitely. So there we go, there's some options for a kind of gig worthy pedal board, I guess, where you only need to plug into to cabs, and then, you know, pop some lights on there and you're set to go. It's been pedal heavy this week, gents. If someone wants to suggest a topic for next week that is perhaps not so pedal heavy,
are you trying to get out of doing your job there?
No, I'm just saying, you know, I will write a podcast if needs be, but you know, let's take some input from the group. Actually, talking about the podcast, you're not here next week.
Oh yeah,
Matt Knight.
It's a Packham Brantanamo Bay special.
Let's never use that.
Alright.
Maybe some guests.
I thought it was going to be you and me.
No, I think tonight has proven that perhaps that shouldn't happen. So I think we'll get some guests, maybe some unheard voices so far from the shop, or maybe get people from the local Brighton music scene to come and chat about their guitars.
I tell you what we should do. We should do acoustics and get Dan Grace on, because we've just started doing Faith acoustics and they are wicked.
Yeah, actually, we were going to mention that at the top of the show. I forgot. We're now a Faith dealer.
They are so good. I spent all day.
That's all I'm
You've got to have faith.
I spent all day filming Dan Grace playing Faith guitars, and every single one of them was totally awesome.
When the guy came to do his little presentation on them, I was like, yeah. I think if a rep can sell a salesman the guitar and you just go, yeah.
Then it means you're a really stupid salesman.
Yeah.
We're probably the most cynical people when it comes to like new brands and stuff. We're like, no. New stuff? God, I know about the old stuff.
Yeah.
But they seem really cool. And the whole sort of vibe seems good. And they seem
well-built.
Yeah. For the money. 360 quid for the coolest looking and sounding part of guitar I've ever seen.
Very good. Suggestions for topics next week or, you know, whatever you want us to talk
about. Also, we've got to start thinking about the live cast.
The live podcast, December 5th.
Gear of the Year!
We need to think about that as well. Accepting suggestions for Gear of the Year. Loads of stuff to talk about.
We did it over a month last year.
No, we did it over a week. Five podcasts.
Oh, that was it.
Did we do a podcast a night?
Yep.
Christ, we didn't have social lives last year, did we?
No, still don't.
I mean, That's true.
I think we should maybe... I don't know how we're going to do it this year, but we'll take some suggestions.
Did we actually record them one a night?
No.
No.
Oh, that's good.
No, we did just some extra long sessions.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, it's the magic of the internet. Suggestions for that. Do come and see us on December the 5th live in store. We're going to be doing a live podcast where you can come down, ask your questions live. We will answer them live. It's going to be streamed on the internet. It should be quite weird.
It's going to be great. Hopefully it will be one.
Yes. Maybe a thin one. joining the fun, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds group or the official GAK page, facebook.com/GAK music, or on the Twitter @GAK_co_UK, or you can follow us individually. You can follow me on Twitter, Mark_random. This week I'm going to be talking about, I don't know what I'm going to be talking about, rock climbing. There we go. Matt Knight, where can people get you?
You can find me on the Facebook.
Can they find you on the Facebook?
No, you can find me on the Facebook group. I just want to say you can find me on the Facebook.
Okay.
You can get me on Twitter. Although I haven't been very active on Twitter recently.
I noticed that.
But I'm going to get back into it in a big way, along with Instagram.
I've kind of sacked Twitter off a bit for Instagram.
You can get me on the same handle on both, so Matt_Knight in the end. Let's get back into Twitter. Let's tweet more things, and then you can link them together, and it's like all the magic of the internet.
We sound like such granddads right now.
Yeah, all the magic. Or you can email me at matt.knight@gak.co.uk and just get in touch and let's drop the blueprints for Mega City 1.
Do it. Joe Branton.
Yes. You can email me at joe.branton@gak.co.uk or you can tweet me at Yosef_900. However, I am spending a lot more time on Instagram at the moment, and you can get me on that same handle there where I post frequently. I post every day and it's always pictures of gear because I take photos of all the high-end stuff that comes into GAK. So if you want to know what cool high-end stuff is here before it hits the GAK website, follow my Instagram.
And if you want to buy it, hit me.
Well, buddy, don't hit him.
No, don't do that. That's probably not a good way to end his life or this podcast.
Let's wrap this up.
Yeah. Thanks so much. We'll see you again next week.
Goodbye.
Bye. You've drawn a giant
Hey.
She's giving birth to a giant mushroom.